This is another one of these sermon titles, topics that you're a little concerned about whether you actually want to preach them. And you can tell, anytime you preach a sermon and the title is hypocrisy, you've kind of put a bit of a bullseye on yourself. What you're going to talk about, how does it fit, how are you then subsequently free from what you're talking about. And as I do often when we're discussing these somewhat trickier kinds of topics, I just want to make it clear that I don't have any feeling, it wasn't revealed to me by the Spirit, that there is an issue of hypocrisy in the church somehow. This is where the lectionary has us. And as I looked at the text and reflected on it, I kept coming back to our Luke reading. And at first I wasn't entirely sure what the draw was. This is a very significant story for me, in that when I was in college, we had a number of classes in which there were journaling requirements, all of which I thought were dumb. You're supposed to read something, you're supposed to put yourself into the story, and then write about it. I just thought, this is dumb. I just want some information. I was one of those students. I was that guy in the class. Until one of the things you're asked to do was to read this story, and then for the next half hour, 30 minutes, no more than that, just half an hour, live your life bent over at the waist. Just do whatever you were doing, studying, going for a walk, whatever you're doing, just bent over at the waist. And at the end of a half an hour, stand up, and then write about what you felt like. An extraordinary breakthrough for me, and I finally understood what the professors were doing, which was not coming up with assignments to annoy me, but to help me see that if I put myself into a story like this, I'll see things about it that I wouldn't otherwise. Because up until then, I'd have some idea that, of course, she was pleased that she could stand up. No, it's a lot more than that. After a half an hour, it was a lot more than that. After 18 years, this would be just an unbelievable experience of release and freedom. And so I thought, maybe I need to preach about that, but I kept coming back to Jesus talking to the ruler of the Sabbath, or of the synagogue, about the Sabbath. And it's really easy for us to just look at this synagogue ruler and say, what a short-sighted, unpleasant person, so wrapped up in the requirements that you can't see past them. He is a hypocrite. And then I thought, but what about me? Does this only happen in New Testament stories? Does this only happen to other people? Is there any possibility that I might someday fall into this, or perhaps already have? And the thing we need to remember is that the synagogue ruler does not consider himself to be the bad guy here. The synagogue ruler is not just at random picking out someone to oppress and say they should be stuck bent over for at least another day. The synagogue ruler, the motivations that he has almost certainly come from an understanding that this is the law that God has given. This is a moral issue. This is something that we can't just toss away. This really matters. And Jesus knew that. Jesus was not a Protestant. He wasn't even a Christian. Jesus was a Jew. He knew this inside and out, and yet he did it anyway. So what's going on? Well, the other sermon title that I thought of, because hypocrisy is something that I don't frequently look at myself and say, yes, that fits. But what we see here in the synagogue ruler is someone who has arrogated unto himself. He has become arrogant enough in himself to say that I know all the details of Sabbath observance. All of them. I can speak about Sabbath observance no matter what. And that's arrogance. And that's something I know really well. That's something I see about two-thirds of the time when I look into the mirror. It's just a besetting issue with me, that I just know better than the people around me, and I fight against it all the time, hopefully with more success now than in years past, but this is something that I know about myself. And so when I look at that, I say, well, hypocrisy maybe. Well, wait a second. What if I look at it from that perspective? What if I look at it from the perspective that says that I know what should be done? And so I was trying to think of a couple of examples that we could use, and I came up with one that's sort of harmless, and one that, I used it at Knox, so I'll probably use it here. But the first one is a missionary leader got in trouble. He was serving in Africa, this is a number of years ago, and he got in trouble because the word got back to the home office that he had told the people coming to church to not wear clothes. People thought, he's lost his mind. You can't tell people not to wear clothes to come to church. Everybody has to wear clothes to come to church. You may have heard this story, and to the best of my knowledge, it's true. The fact that I can't remember who it was, but yeah. What had happened was that well-meaning missionaries had looked at the people coming to church, in particular the women who came to church wearing what they ordinarily wore, which is basically a skirt, and said, you can't do this. You have to wear clothes. You have to be covered up. This is church. We are covered up in church. Go cover up. And so they covered up. They came back, and nobody paid any attention to church. People were looking at what other people were wearing. The men were finding it dangerously provocative because who knows what's going on with it. So he came and said, what are you doing? The point of church is for you to come, to focus on worship, to be together in community. Stop it. Come to church dressed as you ordinarily are. Who had the problem here? Well, certainly not the leader who said that the point of church is for us to worship together in ways that are appropriate to us. It would be absurd for us to start making dress code, saying you have to wear formal wear to come to church, or that you had to be topless for whatever. Yeah, both of those would be a disaster. And would be inappropriate to where we are. So the problem was with the people who said he had done wrong. But not because of what they said, but because they thought they knew. They applied their knowledge to a situation where their knowledge didn't fit. And that's arrogance, and that turns you into a hypocrite. Because in the larger picture, what they were saying was, it doesn't matter that you can't worship here, you have to look like I want you to look. In which case, they've lost sight of the purpose of church. Well, that was old. That was then. We would never do that. Well, the other example that I've come up with is a little bit trickier. And I remind us again that the synagogue ruler was talking about a moral issue. And it, from the perspective of the synagogue ruler, Jesus broke that moral law. Not just a simple regulation, not like speeding or something. This is a moral issue that Jesus broke and then said, you're wrong for complaining about my breaking it. There's a couple of places in Canada where you can go, and under proper supervision, you can inject drugs. They're called safe injection sites. And the government of Canada has put together a place where you can go and do something that is illegal. But you can do it with clean needles, equipment that is less likely to give you a horrifying disease, and with medical attention there just in case something goes wrong. Well, I don't think very many of us look at the law as something that is optional no matter what. And so many people have looked at this safe injection site and said, it's wrong, period, end of story. And I don't have the answer here, but I have a question. Is it perhaps better to do what we can to see that people who have made the choices that have ended them up in addiction live long enough to kick the addiction? Is it better to do that or have them die in an alley? It changes the question, doesn't it? These aren't easy answers. And I'm not going to tell you which side of the safe injection site, or for that matter, what side of the getting dressed for church side you must have. Rather, I want us to think about, why do we say you have to wear clothes in church? Because it's comfortable for us? Because that's what we think it should be like? Because it would embarrass us if we were there and you weren't wearing clothes? None of those are good enough reasons. Are we opposed to safe injection sites because we would just as soon addicts just die anyway? Less of them they are, the better off we are. I've heard that as an argument. Not here. Not from people self-identified as followers of Jesus, but I've heard people make that argument. Is that why we want them closed? We want them closed because we believe strongly in the rule of law. The motivation behind what we do is what puts us into the camp of an arrogant hypocrite or not. What the synagogue ruler had said, and Jesus' example is very important here, what the synagogue ruler had said was, the thirst of an animal is more important than the release of a human being. You can spin it any way you like, but that's what he said. That for the synagogue ruler, it's okay to take a donkey or a cow out and give it water, working on the Sabbath, that is work. That is prohibited. But it's okay to do that, but it's not okay to release a human being from 18 long years of bondage. That's where the problem is. The problem isn't in the synagogue ruler's desire that God be honored in the keeping of his law. Jesus doesn't speak against that. He doesn't say that the synagogue ruler is an idiot. He says, no, the problem is you are misunderstanding the purpose of the Sabbath. We are not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath is made for us. I didn't say that. That's in the Bible. The Sabbath is created for us to have a time of rest because we need it to be full people. But does that mean we let our animals die of thirst? No. But does that mean that we keep someone in bondage a day longer than necessary? No. You can see why I was reluctant to talk about this today. Because it raises up the possibility that we will misunderstand what we're saying and think that everything's up for grabs. That there is no essential moral law. That everything is just what I think will work. And that's not what Jesus is saying. It's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we need to understand why we're making decisions. And if we look carefully at some of the decisions we make, sometimes we don't like what we see. Sometimes our decisions about what should happen, whether it's with our children or our friends, are because it's convenient for us. When we first had twins, and I think this happens to everybody with your first baby at least, but with the twins you get, well, first of all, everybody has a right to talk to you when you have twins. Or at least, especially back then. It's less now, there are more twins. But back then, we had people yelling at us in the shopping center to stop so they could come and look at them. We got this question all the time. Are they good babies? And we answered it. And then we had another talk, and we said, well, what do people mean? And so we started asking, are they good babies? Said, well, what do you mean by a good baby? And we realized, you know what's a good baby? A convenient baby. But we did not have good babies. They cried whenever they felt like it, not when we wanted them to. They woke up whenever they felt like it, not when we wanted them to. They slept when they felt like it, not when we wanted them to. Because really, that's what most people... A good baby is one that plays with strangers, smiles when you want them to, sleeps when you want them to, eats the right thing at the right time. I've never met a baby like that. That's a doll. Why are we asking the question? What's behind the question? What's behind our outrage? And don't be surprised if it's mixed. For the synagogue ruler, I'm sure an authentic, real part of his outrage was the violation of God's law, was the moral issue here. But he hadn't looked far enough. And it was Jesus who held up the mirror and said, you are the kind of person who values the thirst of an animal more than the freedom of a human being. And Jesus says you don't have to choose between those two. We can do both. Jesus does not say here that we don't care about the Sabbath. Jesus says there are times when things need to happen on the Sabbath, because the Sabbath is created for us, not us for it. The laws, the rules, the regulations in the Bible are created for us, not the other way around. We were not created ex nihilo from nothing so that God would have rule keepers. You notice there was only one rule before the fall? It was after that we got all the rest of them. I don't have any sense that this church or any member of this church, any visitor of this church, I have no sense that this building is a locus of arrogant hypocrisy. But what I know is that each of us, if we aren't careful about how we get to conclusions, if we aren't careful about how we ask people to do things or look at what's right and wrong, if we're not careful, we'll just put our own convenience, our own prejudice, our own well-being first. There's nothing wrong with paying attention to your own well-being, but it's not always the first and most important thing. Sometimes it is. It's far more important for me to break the noise laws by squealing my tires if I'm about to be run into by a runaway truck. That's my well-being. I'm taking care of my well-being more than your ears. A trivial example, to be sure. We need to look at why we do things. We need to understand what our actions say about us, and say about what we believe, and say about God. Because when we look at the end of the story, we have two outcomes. When he said this, all his opponents were humiliated. I don't like being humiliated. I don't like humiliating others. But the people were delighted with all the wonderful things he was doing. We want the people around us, without thinking that we care nothing about law, without thinking that we have no basis for decision making, without thinking we are amoral or immoral people, we want people to be delighted with the wonderful things we are doing. Amen. Yes.